Hello, and welcome to this interactive podcast designed to help you think through three challenging ethical scenarios. I'm Eva McLean. We'll introduce each dilemma, which will then be followed by a short scene between Jean, our PR practitioner, and her colleague. At the end of each scene, we suggest you pause the recording. Then consider how you'd react in a similar situation. Once you've thought about it and decided how you'd do it, you can restart the recording and listen to the views of our expert panel, Professor Anne Gregory and Donald Steele. In many cases, in ethical situations, there is no right or wrong answer. But we hope these will act as a stimulus for thought and discussion and help you arrive at appropriate ethical decisions. Before you start listening, make sure you have CIPR's Code of Conduct and the decision tree in front of you. They'll help you as you turn your thoughts to what you would advise our friend Jean to do. The scenarios have been developed by members of the Professional Practices Committee in consultation with CIPR's regulatory consultant. They're all fictitious and are not intended to represent any real-life situations or people. Jean is a freelance PR consultant for a trendy new online fashion retail company for young women. The company wants to develop a strong presence online, and she's been taken on for her great digital and social media skills. The MD, Rupert, has told her, "I want us to be everywhere online, to take the world by storm with all our posts going viral." He's called a confidential meeting and excitedly shows Jean a video filmed in secret of their arch rival, where the man talks lasciviously about women, uses lewd language and mocks them. Rupert tells Jean to anonymously get the tape into the public domain and out his rival. We now hear the scene in the company office between Jean and Rupert.
So, there you have it, Jean. We've nailed the CEO of our biggest rival. What did you think of the video?
I'm pretty shocked he talked the way he did about women, Rupert. And he's running a company selling clothes to women. Yuck!
Jean, I want you to find a way to make the tape public.
What?
Get it into the public domain without our fingerprints on it.
Rupert, I'm not sure that's the right thing to do. After all, we took the recording without his knowledge. Won't this backfire on us? And what's the legal point of view on this?
Great news from the legal boys. They can't see, given the circumstances, that he'd want to take us to court. The whole tape would get out and it'd finish him off.
I'm uncomfortable with this, Rupert. I'd like to see all the footage and know more about it. I want to be sure I know the whole story.
Look, Jean, this is big for us. We're paying you a lot of money. I want the tape out there.
So you've heard the story. What would you advise Jean to do? What are the legal implications of Rupert's request? Is there a public interest defence in ethical terms? Would publication of the video harm Rupert or his company? If the MD insists on this line of action, what can Jean do? Should she relinquish the account? Now, pause the recording for a few minutes and think, how would you advise Jean?
Well, this is a really interesting scenario, and we can imagine this actually happening. So for me, this is all about integrity. And there are two elements to the integrity piece here. First of all, this material was obtained in a clandestine way. And we as practitioners should have nothing to do with material that is not obtained transparently and openly. And the second element is about our client here, Rupert, wants us not to disclose what the source of this salacious information is. And that, again, is against our code of ethics. So those are the two main ethical points coming from the code. It's about using clandestine material, not allowed, and it's about non-disclosure of the client from whom material originates, not allowed.
I completely agree with you, Anne. I think this one is really clear, that it would be unethical for Jean to proceed on the way that she is asked to do so. However, I rather liked how Jean approached it by saying that she really wanted to hear the whole tape and know all the circumstances. So I think that a potential way forward for her is to say, look, I really want to know all of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Has the the particular section of the tape being misedited and so on to present a different picture, because only when she knows the whole circumstances can she properly advise the client of the right action to do, but she certainly cannot put that into the public domain or in some way on social media without being clear who it is. That, I agree, that's completely unethical.
I think it's really interesting when you get clients like this, and that we just stand back from this situation. I'm guessing that Jean is going to face this sort of issue with this particular client on more than one occasion. We know these sorts of clients, don't we? They're always pushing the envelope. They're always wanting you to do something slightly on the edge. They will get commercial advantage through whatever means they happen to think is going to be OK at the moment. So Jean, as a practitioner, is going to be constantly on her guard against this, the requirements of this client. She'll probably find herself in conflict over time. And maybe what she needs to think about is, well, how do I change the behaviour of this guy? And maybe she needs to think about, well, he's not going to be amenable to classic ethical arguments, but maybe he'll be amenable to understanding the consequences of his action. So if this gets out, you know, he's going to be exposed for his underhand practices, and he could well win approbation from those who buy from him, and he may lose business. So maybe at this stage, Jean might want to think about, well, if I take the pragmatic arguments to this guy first, knowing full well what the real ethical arguments are, that might be a way to actually get into his armour, because this is a guy who thinks, you know, business is everything, I'll do anything to win. And I need to find a way to actually begin to win him over to a more ethical way of behaving.
And Rupert quotes to Jean a very selective version of events of what the lawyer's opinion is. I think it's sort of, you know, it's certainly potentially the case that publication in any form, and remember social media's publication of a surreptitious recording for commercial advantage could be unlawful. The subject of the recording could win an injunction. If it's unfairly edited, they could sue for defamation. They're quite significant issues, and people sometimes, don't they? They say, well, it's only social media, it's not the same in our thing. You can be traced. And I think that Jean really needs to be very cautious here. It's my view that as a practitioner, your integrity is something that is non-negotiable. You simply are not prepared to trade that for commercial advantage. I think that's true of companies too. So I think you're right in saying that there might be a pragmatic way of Jean managing the situation and persuading the CEO that actually, if it backfires on them, it will be very damaging for the company. And let's look at some other ways of doing this.
And then over time, as she gets to know this client better, and as she begins to demonstrate the way that she operates, and particularly she's really competent at her job, you know, she can then begin to introduce, well, this is a good way to actually behave. This is actually winning you business. We act professionally. We have nothing to hide. We don't need to do anything underhand. We can secure the business by being ethical and being able to advance your cause through the best possible means, that is, by building an impregnable reputation.
But I think we liked Jean. Well done, Jean. You're starting to get on the right track.
Yeah.
So there you have the views of the panel. Did you agree? We thought the code helps us here. First, we should deal fairly with other businesses. We shouldn't engage in deception. We should deal with integrity when communicating with the general public. And of course, we should be open and transparent. Now, let's move to the second scenario. Our friend Jean is now a PR manager working in-house for a UK-based producer of ready meals. The company sources suppliers from various countries. Jean has been promoting their high international standards, ethical values, and strict no child labour policy. She recently organised a photo shoot in Bangladesh using a local photographic agency of young agricultural workers who work for one of the company's suppliers. The pictures came out beautifully, with apparently well-dressed, happy, smiling workers. But Jean suddenly gets an anonymous tip-off that the workers were in fact coerced into posing for the shots, were given clothes just for the day, which were then taken away at the end of the day, and that the employees have very poor conditions at work with no proper sanitation. On initial investigation, a visitor to the company that day had expressed concerns about the workers dressing up for the picture. But the workers themselves said they wanted to look their best for the picture and didn't want to let the company down. Jean believes there is cause for concern and that the company should consider an audit of suppliers. She gently probes this with Ali, the director of marketing, but she realises that by raising her concerns, the food company may sack its suppliers and then the workers will lose their only income.
Ali, I wanted to raise something with you about the pictures we did in Chittagong.
The pictures were fantastic, weren't they, Jean? The website looks terrific and they've been used by all sorts of bloggers and influencers. I'm really pleased with the result.
Ali, I've had information from a contact which is worrying me. She says the workers were forced to wear smart clothes and the clothes were taken away from them when the pictures were taken. She says they were frightened they would lose their jobs if they didn't cooperate.
Don't worry, Jean, this kind of thing happens all the time over there. The workers would have been excited to be in the picture.
But to give them clothes to wear and take them away from them? I think our customers would think that's a pretty bad thing to do.
Honestly, Jean, you're worrying too much. It's different out there. People would expect workers to dress up for a picture. I don't think anyone would have thought that farm workers dressed like that normally. And we've never claimed we let them keep the clothes.
But we do say that this is our team, and we don't say anywhere they were wearing borrowed clothes.
I think you're taking things too far, Jean. For goodness sake, even top models wear borrowed clothes for pictures.
But Ali, this is a supplier we've had problems with in the past. They haven't even given their workers proper toilets. I think we should have an audit of all our suppliers. After all, we do claim that we have very high standards.
Look, Jean, you have to live with these things when you work with countries that are very different from the UK. It's the way things are done. And if we rock the boat with our supplier, they might go under. And then the workers will all lose their income. I'm sure you wouldn't want that to happen.
It's time to pause the recording now and think about this very challenging dilemma for Jean. These are some of the things you might consider. Should she take into account the cultural differences and expectations of another country? Would the public feel deceived if they knew the clothes were taken away at the end of the shoot? Should Jean balance her worries about the pictures with Ali's concern that pushing this point could result in the supplier losing the contract and the workers losing their livelihood? What would you advise Jean to do? Please pause the recording now and consider your reactions. And when you're ready, press play and you can then hear the panel.
I thought here the first issue is perhaps not the bigger issue that's facing Jean, but is the issue of lending clothes for a picture, which are given back. I think that might, I don't know, it might be the practice in some countries for people to borrow clothes to look nice for a picture. Do they want to be photographed in their agricultural clothes? But I don't think UK consumers would look at that picture and imagine for a second that these were borrowed clothes. And I think that that picture is misleading and therefore it's a breach of the code in terms of integrity and not misleading the public.
Absolutely right. I would 100% agree with you on that. And it's really interesting in the world of social media and where visual images are becoming more and more important, visual integrity is quite as important as spoken integrity or actions. And so putting forward a picture like this is telling a story about the company that is actually untrue to the very foundations of the company, which is all about ethical sourcing, which is all about being ethical, an ethical business. So I think they could actually use this, if they think about their supply chain more broadly, to actually back up their reputational claims around integrity, maybe by working with these suppliers, including the photographers who may not be entirely in tune with Western ways of thinking. And remember, this is for a Western audience. So although Jean's got a responsibility to understand what goes on in countries that they source from, the people who source for them also need to have an understanding and be brought into a sort of Western way of thinking, because that's where their future markets are going to be. And practices like this are not really sustainable anymore in the West. So Jean, I think, has got a job of work to do, to which will be a good job of work, which is to say, let's look at our supply chain, let's work with them, turn it into a virtue. We are educating our suppliers. We're bringing them with us. We're opening up new business opportunities for them, because as they change their own practices, they're going to open their markets.
I thought that perhaps a point here is that Jean has likely commissioned this photographic agency, so she is commissioning a supplier who should be holding the same standards that she's espousing about the agricultural suppliers. At this year's CIPR Maggie Nally lecture, we were reminded that practitioners that work in different countries have to understand the different cultural norms. They have to take time to learn about these. So there's a bit of a job of work to do here. Jean is also a commissioner of suppliers, so she's got a duty to make sure and to interrogate exactly what happens and what happens in the work she commissions abroad. So there's a kind of learning point there for Jean too.
I think as well that this is a lonely position for Jean, and she actually needs some support. Don't forget the CIPR has the ethics hotline. So don't just make a general inquiry. There's a specific resource there to help you with these issues.
I think that's really useful for people like Jean, who it can be quite a lonely position in a company. And as a practitioner, in complete confidence, to talk it through on the hotline and get some viewpoints to help your thinking, because she's got a big job of work to do in this company.
And it sounds as if maybe the marketing department could do with a little bit of ethical education. And maybe Jean is the very person to help them with that.
So you've heard Adam and Donald's views. We think that the CIPR's code of conduct has relevance in the following ways. You should not deceive the public. You should be truthful. And you should have responsibility for the behaviour of your suppliers and, of course, of their employees. And resolution through positive change protects workers rather than a knee-jerk firing of the supplier. In our third and final scenario, we join Jean again. This time, she is working for an agency with a pro bono client. The client is a voluntary organisation which promotes community work amongst young people from low-income families. The CEO, John Doe, in his late 50s, is married and is a highly respected figure in the charity world. And he likes to keep a low profile. The CEO is Jean's main contact at the client. Jean's friend Linda isn't close to the CEO, but is a Facebook friend of his. Linda quietly lets Jean know that she has seen a Tinder profile with John Doe's picture on it. The picture is semi-disguised, but Linda recognises a distinctive facial scar. She is surprised he is seeking casual encounters with women as young as 18, and is concerned that someone of his age, leading a youth organisation, is behaving in this way. Let's join Jean and Linda as they have coffee together.
Jean, you do some work for that youth organisation, don't you? The one which John Doe is the boss of? Well, I'm a Facebook friend of John's. How well do you actually know him?
Reasonably well. Our agency has been supporting him for free for about 3 years now. Why do you ask?
You know he's married, right?
Yes, I've met his wife. She's a lovely lady.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know John has a profile on Tinder.
What?
I saw his picture on Tinder. Well, it wasn't his full face, but he has a distinctive scar and there's no mistaking it. He's married, 56, he leads a youth organisation and he's after 18-year-old girls. Ugh.
Oh, Linda, you must be mistaken.
There's no mistaking it, Jean. I think I'm going to unfriend him online. It's horrible.
I can't believe it, Linda.
You had better watch out. If it gets to the press he's doing this, your organisation won't look too good.
You're thinking of telling the press?
No, of course not. But if I've spotted it, someone else likely will. You should tell him his secret is out.
What do you think are Jean's ethical obligations in this scenario? First, is the CEO's behaviour lawful? Should you set aside your own moral view about John Doe's behaviour? Does the fact that the client is pro bono make a difference? And is Jean's duty to the CEO or the organisation? Pause the recording here and press play once you've had a think about it to hear what the panel thought about this tricky dilemma.
Well, Donald, this is a really tangled knot. We've got all sorts in here. We've got personal ethics, we've got professional ethics, we've got hearsay, we've got possible implications for a charity. We've got a CEO in the middle of this who's a highly respected figure. What about his reputation for the future? What if people find... This is a really, really knotty one. So let's just begin to untangle this. So let me just deal with the personal ethics bit and then we'll go on to other issues. First of all, I might not like the fact that this CEO, John, is actually trying to entice 18-year-olds to have relationships with him. Somebody else might think that's perfectly okay. These are women of an age able to make their own decisions. So my personal ethics need to be sort of calibrated with, is he what he's doing illegal, or is it just distasteful to me? And those two things are entirely different. If he was trying to entice 5-year-olds or 10-year-olds or 15-year-olds into non-consensual relationships, that would be entirely different. So disentangling personal ethics from the law is one issue.
I thought the decision tree helps here. If it was an unlawful activity, Jean may indeed have a duty to go straight to the police in a case, for example, involving minors. But here it's a lawful activity. I think the second point here is, as you say, I mean, listening to Linda, she's hardly without any degree of malice. I mean, she doesn't like it, and her conversation was a bit loaded. I thought the issue for Jean was, this is gossip. How does she know that there's even a shred of truth in it? And even if the picture does appear, people use other people's pictures online all the time. I thought there was a very clear duty here to apply a balancing test. The CEO has got a very high right to a private and personal life that is uninterfered with by others. But that always has to be balanced by your professional duty. And in this case, I thought that John's right to privacy, in my personal view, is his right to privacy is very high. However, there is a reputational risk. It's a risk. It's not happening, but it is a risk. And it may be the right thing for Jean to respect the confidentiality and not spread it around the company, but to go directly, if she seems to know him, and have a very difficult conversation with him to sort of say along the lines of, I'm sure there's no truth in this, but I thought you ought to know there's a bit of gossip about you, and I thought I would tell you so that you could think about it. But that would be a very difficult conversation to have.
All three of these scenarios have brought out different ethical issues, and they're very complex. And for me, there's something about us becoming practice in ethical thinking. And it was Aristotle who said, practice the virtues and you will become virtuous. And these things are not easy. And very often we don't see black and white ethical decisions to be made. They're knotty, they're complex, like the ones that we thought through. And the whole point of ethical thinking and having an ethical mindset for me is that you regularly refresh, you test yourself, you give yourself exercises, you think things through, you reflect on your practice, you consider the decisions that you've taken. Were there different ways to think about that? Should I have acted differently? And it's by just going through those exercises, constant reflection, that you become an ethical practitioner.
So you've heard Anne and Donald's very interesting conversation about this third scenario. One thing emerges from it very clearly. If you become aware of allegations relating to serious criminal misconduct, you must act and report these. So this is how we think that the CIPR's code of conduct can help you in this instance. First, you must be clear about the difference between personal and professional ethics. You should maintain the highest standards in your professional role, act with integrity, and respect confidentiality. Finally, don't be afraid to seek advice from a fellow qualified professional within your company, perhaps the company lawyer or the compliance officer, or of course, from the CIPR. We hope you've enjoyed this interactive podcast and that the scenes today have helped you think through these very difficult ethical dilemmas. Of course, not all ethical dilemmas are as challenging as this. Should your colleague who takes office stationery home be reported for theft, for example? Or if you suspect they are misusing their expenses, what should you do? There are plenty of everyday examples which you could think through on your own. In today's scenarios, not all ethical situations had an easy, crystal-clear solution. In every case, the CIPR's code of conduct and the decision tree will help you decide. And don't forget, the CIPR's ethics hotline is available to practitioners who wish to discuss any ethical problems in complete confidence. In today's podcast, Ebony Gale played Jean, Stuart McBride played the company executives, Francesca Knight played Linda. Studio production was by Callum Swingler. And we'd like to say a special thank you to Lansons Live, part of Lansons PR, for their very generous use of their technical facilities.